Okaloo, and welcome back to the Catch Yourself On podcast. I'm your host, Rosie, and this week we are talking about generational inclusion and collaboration. What stereotypes do you hold about baby boomers? What causes generational gaps to form? And why do different generations blame each other for society's problems and pitfalls? All that and more in this week's episode, full of myth-busting, knowledge-sharing. I really hope that you enjoy. This week, I am delighted to be joined by Dr. Zachary Walker to talk all about generational difference and inclusion. Zachary is an academic, author, and international speaker. He has worked with businesses, organizations, and policymakers in more than 30 countries to challenge audiences and groups to recognize and address the challenges that they encounter. Zachary is an engaging and compelling speaker, and it was a pleasure to be able to sit down with him and to at least virtually have a discussion on this topic. So without further ado, I really hope that you enjoy my conversation with Dr. Zachary Walker. Thank you so much, Zachary, for joining me to talk about cross-generational communication, generational diversity, things that I know that you're very passionate about and that you speak a lot about. Now, I think this is becoming more prevalent. People are talking about it a bit more, like you see, particularly in the context of workplaces, and you can now go on courses to learn about how people within different generations can interact and get on better. And I think that definitely, like, growing up at a particular time does leave like a strong mark on individuals. And like, age is often a predictor of different opinions and that kind of thing. But I thought we could begin with a myth busting round, because obviously we are more than our generations. We are individuals. Some of the stereotypes that you kind of see thrown around, I thought I could share them with you, and then you could unpack them and say how it can be reductive, put people and characterize people in boxes. So one of the ones that I thought, which I read about, and this speaks to me because I'm part of Generation Z, is how Generation Z don't like face-to-face interactions.
Yeah, and this is so interesting, because lockdown ended in London basically yesterday, right? Yeah. And if you would have gone out to Soho last night, you would have seen it packed with people who are craving face-to-face interactions. And who were the majority of those people? They were young people. And so it's very easy to say, oh, well, they would just want to hide behind the screens and they don't like to talk face to face and all that stuff. But I think that what we've seen is, just because you're adept at something and you're comfortable behind a keyboard doesn't mean that that's all you want.
Yeah.
That's all you need. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing that, you know, the last year, right, has been a really interesting example. I know lots of older people. And when I say older people, I mean any number of age groups. That have said, you know what, no, I kind of like working from home. I don't really need to go in and do face-to-face. I kind of enjoy this whole virtual thing. I can stay at home. I can help watch my kids more, you know, so there's the practical side of it, but there's also this side of, I didn't actually need quite as much face-to-face interaction as I thought. But you're absolutely right. It's an absolute myth that young people don't want face-to-face. We know that they actually appreciate it and thrive on it. But I think what we've also seen is they don't want to waste their time. Because, you know, obviously Generation Z and some of our younger, they've grown up with phones, right? So they've always got everything they need right at their fingertips. And so although they want face-to-face, if it's not going to be engaging, then why would I pay attention to it?
Yeah, if it can be done so much more efficiently and effectively via Zoom. Yeah.
You know, there's a whole line that people say that, you know, we're in an attention economy. Mm. The economy right now is for your attention. Now, if that's face-to-face, great. Because, you know, if you are with your friends, you probably want to be really present with your friends because they're interesting. But as soon as people or things or topics or lectures or workplaces stop getting interesting, then of course I'm going to go back to this.
Yeah.
And we see that's not just true with young people. That's true with everybody.
Yeah. You know,
if you go out and really pay attention, you'll see older people sitting at tables on their phones across from their partners.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an attention economy. It's not an age economy.
It's really interesting what you say about older people and workplaces sometimes wanting to remote work more, because I've noticed that in my workplace with the conversations I've been having with colleagues, like the younger people are quite keen to get back into the office in a lot of ways and the older people maybe aren't. So it's interesting how your priorities sometimes shift as well in unexpected ways, as the pandemic has shown. And the other stereotype which I stumbled across online was millennials are lazy and self-entitled. That's one that crops up quite a lot. I feel like millennials get quite a bad rap.
This is kind of one of those, if you were to go back to the 1800s, right? Said, oh, young people, they're so entitled. You know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those, this is not necessarily about millennials or Generation Z, although that's what we tend to say. This is, we just always think that young people are entitled, you know, are presumptuous and arrogant and disrespectful. In 30 years, Generation Z will be saying this about, you know, whatever generation we are. In fact, they're calling this generation, Generation Zoom. People who are born now, they're calling Generation Zoom because school's been online, and you know, so, but whatever it is, in 30 years, Generation Z will be saying the exact same things about, you know, the generation behind them. And it is unfair. It's an unfair characterization, because at the end of the day, you know, when you're a young person, you are idealistic and you do think that the world should be better and you do push for things differently. Some of that tempers over time. And sometimes it doesn't. There are distinct differences in generations, but there are also some pretty distinct similarities between age groups, right? And so we can't necessarily just deny those, because it's easy to put things in categories, but we have to be really careful that we're looking at the broader picture and the broader spectrum.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, Zachary, because I feel like often the aging process is like left out of these discussions of generational trends and generational difference. Like I was reading some people saying like people do change over time to a certain extent, and millennials can end up being like baby boomers at the same age at a different stage in their life.
Absolutely.
And then I think this is also happening a lot in conversations, because millennials are now like entering into C-level positions. Like we're seeing a lot of millennials like turning 40 and becoming leaders and very senior leaders as well. So it's quite interesting to see how different their leadership styles are from their predecessors. So like how far then would you say that some of these generational trends are cyclical?
So again, I don't know that they're cyclical in the sense that I think there's a natural maturation that happens over time, right? And one of the things that I've noticed in my own leadership positions is that, you know, it's very easy to criticize what our leadership is doing until you're in that position.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's always easy to say, oh, well, they should do it that way. What we don't often understand is that they're not only hearing it from the bottom, they're also having pressures from the top, or the pressures from external. And so the maturation of people over time is one of those things that changes. That being said, I think that there are some distinct differences when we look at things like diversity and equality, that, you know, we know that this generation is going to fight for. I personally do not think that that will stop. Causes that they're passionate about are going to remain things that they are passionate about. And this is mostly because of exposure, because we know that this generation is the most exposed to the world that any generation has ever been. And that's not just from the people that live next to them. That's from YouTube. That's from Twitter. That's from social media. You know, you're seeing other cultures that just show up in your inbox, when before, to see that, you would have had to go there. Right? And so it's easy to become passionate about things because they're literally living in your house now. And so, you know, I think that there is this kind of idea of the maturation process as we age, but I also think there are things that happen when we're young that we really hold on to. And I think that diversity and inclusion is one of the ones that this generation is really going to hold on to.
And online, quite a lot of people are saying about how the younger generations are maybe less money motivated and more prioritizing like purpose over compensation, that kind of thing. And I think it's hard in a lot of ways, because I was talking to another senior colleague at work and she was saying, yeah, but you have to be careful because social responsibility is something which is on everyone's minds right now. It's not just young people. And like, there is this commitment that we're seeing across generations as well. So it is quite hard, because I feel like in a lot of ways these issues as well are on a general universal level affecting everyone too, but maybe we're seeing like more of a push from the younger generations as well. It's like really nuanced conversation to explore.
It is. And I think that, so for, I'll give you an example. So when you look at Black Lives Matter, and it's not like race is a new thing, right? It's not like race hasn't come to the forefront of the media or public attention before. This has been around for decades and decades and decades. The biggest difference in the last 4 to 5 years with Black Lives Matter is now young white people are participating. They're not just saying, yeah, I believe in, you know, I believe in equality. That's great.
Yeah,
we know that like of Generation Z, about 85 to 90% of people had actually gone to a march. They'd gone to a rally. They'd actually done something instead of just saying, yeah, I support it. They're actually doing things with this. So yes, I agree with your colleague. Social responsibility is everybody's issue. And we all have to take responsibility, especially when it comes to things like Black Lives Matter, white males.
Yeah,
you know, the white people, we have to take a big piece of this. But the nice thing that we're seeing is that out of Generation Z white people, 80 to 90% of them are participating. That's very different than what we've seen before. So there's clearly a higher level of passion or thing. And you know, you can just go back through through the pictures. Look at the media pictures from the 1950s and 60s when things were happening, from the 1980s and 90s when things were happening. Look at those pictures and see who's in the crowd.
Yeah.
And now you look at the pictures, it's a very different crowd than it was.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of that is driven by young people.
And like that active participation as well, rather than like passive spectatorship almost. Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I was going to say as well, like how you've noticed, Zachary, the generation gap affecting interactions between people. Like a common example of this is the workplace, where you have like a lot of cross-generational communication and collaboration, people leading teams. But like often you kind of, I don't want to say like take it for granted, but you often assume that like cross-generational collaboration is something normal and it's something we take for granted. But then when you see the amount of articles and people talking about it, it's like something we actively have to work on, because there are massive perspective differences sometimes when you bring teams together.
But the thing is, what we have to remember is those things make us stronger,
right?
It's not as smooth as it might be, but at the end of the day, it's better product. And so whether, you know, whether it's a service you're offering or a product you're offering, that roughness makes it good.
Yeah.
If it's too smooth, then you probably didn't ask the right questions. You probably didn't bring the right voices to the table.
Yeah.
So that idea of intergenerational communication is really important. Mm. And I think that there's responsibilities on both sides.
Mm.
One of the things that I think it's easy for young people to do is to say, oh, well, you know, they don't talk to us, or they don't listen to us, or they don't, you know what I mean? And to look upwards. I know that the mentors that I've had in my life, I'm the one who had to pursue that relationship.
Yeah.
You know, I had to go to this person and say, listen, I'd really like to pick your brain. I had to come humbly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I'd really like to pick your brain. Could I buy you lunch once a month? Mentees have a bigger responsibility than mentors in many cases. You've got to be willing to push the conversation. You've got to be willing to say, hey, I need your help. And and one of the things that I talk to a lot of young people about is who sits at your table. And what I mean by that is, if you have a major life decision, who are the five people you're going to invite over for dinner? And if the five people you're going to invite over for dinner are all your age, you do not have the right table.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You need to have someone who's older and wiser than you. You need to have someone who doesn't care about your career at all, who only cares about you as the person, who can say to you, you know what, Roz, I know it sounds good, but that doesn't sound like you. You need to have someone who's completely opposite from you, whether that's sexual orientation or ethnicity, or, you know, if you're from the West, maybe they're from the East, or whatever it may be. You know, you need to have someone who you're also mentoring. Because oftentimes your mentees, you know, if you're Generation Z, invite your 15 year old sibling to that conversation, because they're going to ask you hard questions that you're like, oh, I hadn't even thought about that. Because it's been, you know what I mean? Like there's a set group of 4 to 5 people that you need to have at your table. But when we talk about mentoring and the mentee, you have to put that table together.
You
have to make sure that you're inviting that mentor to the conversation, because it's easy to say that, well, they don't listen to us. Well, you know what? If you sent one email or filled out one survey, it's more than that. You know, sit down, buy them lunch, have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
And I've found very few mentors who aren't willing to engage when they're asked personally.
For sure.
You know, when you're asked personally, people like to help other people.
Yeah.
You know, So
and the idea of like your legacy as well, and knowing that you're helping someone beyond yourself, and that will go down through generational. And it's quite interesting. I think that question of like authority, which you brought up, is particularly interesting in like generational relationships. Like often it is assumed like older generations have more authority, and then if there's like a power dynamic there, sometimes it's weird. But the reverse mentoring is really good because it diminishes that power dynamic in a lot of ways. You have something to bring to the table, and you are helping the other person as well and informing them with your perspective.
There's this idea of obedience versus discipline. You know, sometimes we're obedient in the workplace. You know, that's the way the manager is, and that's the way the rules. And then there's the self-discipline. Right? Mm-hmm. The self-discipline to do things that way because you know that it's best.
Mm-hmm.
And I often talk about it's the difference between a dog. A dog is obedient. A dog doesn't necessarily have self-discipline. We have to decide, mm-hmm. you know, to ourselves, what is it that we're actually interested in here? Are we actually, because there are things, there are tasks, and there are things that we have to be obedient about that we mm-hmm. probably want to be obedient about.
Yeah.
There's also things that we want to have some kind of self-discipline, and we want to think, and we want to create.
Mm.
Figuring out which ones of those fit where in our lives is important. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a question of authority.
Yeah.
It always has to do with us. Yeah. You know, and the choices that we make.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And you talked about it briefly, Zachary, but like the role of technology when it comes to the generation gap, like, would you say that's something which has been like a catalyst for generational misunderstandings or whatever? Or do you think, I mean, in a lot of ways, it is a tool that can bring people together.
So this is something I would say that older generations are at fault for.
Mm.
There's that whole saying, the most dangerous words in the English language are, we've always done it this way. But I also think, how do you define technology? You know, to people who wrote on cave walls, a pencil was technology. People who, you know, were using pencils, a typewriter was technology.
Mm.
People use typewriters, computers were technology. One of the things I often talk to teachers about is, you know, you can yell all you want, but once the train's left the station, your yelling doesn't matter.
Mm.
So accept reality. Technology is here to stay. How can you use it responsibly and appropriately? But it is funny when we talk about the age generations. I don't know if you've heard the whole terminology, digital natives versus digital immigrants.
I've heard of digital natives, but not digital immigrants.
So yeah, the idea that the younger generations are digital natives because they just kind of grown up with technology, and that older generations are digital immigrants, like they've been brought into this land of technology, right? But like, that's so not true, right? It's not like when any of us came out of the womb, we had an iPhone in our hand, right? Like, it was not like we're born with technology. The difference is that younger people will get in there and they'll play with it.
Mm.
They'll figure it out. If they can't upload the video on TikTok the first time, they'll figure out a way to edit it and cut it down and put different captions on it and change the music or whatever, and they'll figure it out. Oftentimes, as we get older, if it doesn't work the very first time, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
And this is something that's important, right?
Yeah.
Is that for our younger generation, don't fall into that pattern of giving up when things get tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know people who are all over Facebook and Twitter who are like, oh, I just can't be bothered to use TikTok. You're on your way to being one of those older people who talks about the younger generation and how they're so out of touch with technology. You see what I mean? Like, we have to make sure that it's not about being a digital native or being a digital immigrant or being old or being young. It's about who's willing to try stuff.
Yeah, and having a curious mindset.
Curious mindset and diving in and being willing when it doesn't go right the first time to, you know, say, you know what, that didn't work. I'm going to try it again. One of the things we talk about a lot is growth mindset. I'm sure you've heard of that maybe, or grit.
Yeah.
And we talk about that as adults all the time. Well, the kids, they don't have grit. They don't have a growth mindset and the whole thing. That's one of the most exciting things about technology. When things don't go wrong, we can say, oh, well, you know, that didn't work. Let's do something else.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that kind of attitude as a leader,
mm-hmm.
what does that say to your younger people? I can make mistakes. I can try new things. I'm willing, you know, and so that's that idea of, this isn't about technology. It's about mindset.
It also draws out a lot of the similarities within generations as well, because it makes you like, it shifts away from like the tool itself, and it makes you see like the things that you can orientate around as well. Like often we only see difference and we are unaware of a lot of the similarities. And even when I was reading on like career goals for the different generations, and a lot of the stuff that comes up, oh, Gen X and baby boomers are very honed into financial security, and younger generations have different career goals. Like, how different would you say that generational goals and objectives and things, or?
So I think that there's a couple of things that come to play. I think, again, let's go back to the maturation process as opposed to generational differences.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, while we're young and we're living in a house with three other people and, you know, we're paying 500 pounds a month in rent or whatever, it's easier to not care about money, right?
Mm.
But when you're getting older and you want a little bit more space and you just want to come home one night because your job is killing you and you just want to come home one night and there to be silence, you start to think, okay, well, you know what? I need to earn a little bit more money so I can have my own flat.
Mm.
And then, you know, you meet someone and you start planning a family and you're like, well, I guess I need to earn a little bit more money because we got to have a little bit more space. So I think that's just part of the maturation process, right? That's not necessarily generational.
Yeah.
What I would say, one of the ways to understand generations is to look at their parents.
Mm.
So when you look at baby boomers, they had just come out of wars and in some cases, depending on how far you were going back, real famine. And so they really wanted that kind of stability. I would say that as we've kind of moved forward, people, and we know this, right? Because people change jobs so much more, doesn't necessarily mean that they don't want the financial stability. But what it doesn't mean is, is that they're not necessarily just going to stay with one company to get it.
Yeah.
You know, people are more empowered now. And part of this is technology, because when you were working 40 or 50 hours 30 years ago, when were you going to have time to figure out a CV, drop your resume off at different places, do all the network? Well, now I work 50 hours a week and I go home on the weekend and I do all that online. So now I can create the networks. I can market myself. So that's part of individuals taking some of the power back and saying, you know what? No, I'm actually in charge of this. And stability and finances and all that stuff are just as important to me. But that doesn't mean that I have to stay enslaved to this particular company to get that.
When you said about the famine and the world wars and those political events, it made me think about two things. The first one, do you think that now, Zachary, the generational gap seems a bit bigger because of the political landscape with Brexit, climate change? I feel like there's a lot going on, and also young people are maybe a bit more like engaged in politics in a lot of ways now, or at least like talking about it online sometimes, it seems, anyway, or actively participating, like we said before. But do you think then that kind of drives like a bigger generational gap, or where do you sit on that?
I don't think that's something that we can answer right now. Ask in 10 years. One of the things that, and this is probably more of a personal reflection than a podcast professional one, but I'm going to give it to you. You can edit it out if you want to. One of the things I've realized personally, as I've kind of, I'm living in my sixth country now. I'm still decently young, not real young, not as young as you. But one of the things that I've recognized is how powerful the media is. And the messages that we're bombarded with all the time, how much they shape how we think, how we view, how we see, how we act. And so I think it's easy right now to get caught up in things that are all over the media. In 10 years, if people are still really upset about Brexit, which, to be honest, my personal opinion is they probably will be. You know, that is something that's been lingering.
Yeah.
But you can look up stories that were massive a year ago. They're gone now because the media is taking them away. In many ways, yes, it's taking back power politically, but it's also being a bit more nuanced and thoughtful and deliberate about what media we channel.
Yeah.
And what media we pay attention to.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one thing though that will have like a lasting impact is obviously the pandemic. And what do you think the mark of the pandemic will be on like generational stuff? Because you know the way people are saying like, we're going to go back to the roaring 20s and everyone's going to be out like partying all the time.
I think the companies and the organizations that adjust the best and offer work from home and, you know, schools that are able to adjust quicker will pull out. Now, from a generational perspective, people are so worried about, oh, the kid lost a year of school. Who cares? What matters is, what did you show them in that year? Did you show them love? Did you show them that, you know, when things go wrong, it's okay. We can stay calm. We can make it through this. All that stuff is the stuff that lasts throughout life. They're not going to necessarily remember their times tables. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to remember that one lesson in their science class. What they're going to remember is, how did my parents handle this? How did my colleagues work with me through this? And I think that that's the thing that is kind of getting lost a little bit in this conversation, is everyone's so focused on what people have lost. There's some initial research out there that says some kids have actually gained a lot. You know, they've enjoyed not having to rush off to the football pitch for this lesson and the dance lesson and the music lesson over here and then this after school club. You know what I mean? They've actually enjoyed, I can actually sit and think and mull over stuff and I think that's really valuable too. So I think, again, this is another one of those questions that we've got to wait 10 or 15 years to see.
That's really interesting. And like kids playing together, imagining, storytelling, all that kind of thing. Yeah.
That's the valuable stuff.
And I think as well, like even accessibility and stuff, it's opened up this whole, I mean, when I was at uni, like lectures weren't recorded at all. You couldn't record your lectures or anything like that. And now, obviously, I think in that sense, like it's really good to see the options that are being opened up.
And we know how important this is. Mm-hmm. We know how important these options are. Mm-hmm. If we want to be a fully inclusive society, we have to offer options. And that includes lectures, like you said, that are being recorded. So this is the interesting thing about that. When we talk about recorded lectures, we always think about, oh, the person with the disability. What about you when you just were sick that day and you just, your head was, you had a runny nose and your head hurt and all that stuff. And you coughed right when the lecturer said something. And you're like, oh, it'd be great if I could go back and listen to that again. You know what I mean? It's not just about the disability, right? It's about anybody. So what about the second or third or fourth language learner who's clearly brilliant because they're fluent in four or five languages, but just didn't understand that word and wants to listen to it again?
Yeah.
All of that stuff is what recording lectures is, what creating accessible content. Someone posted on Twitter the other day that, you know, you can say what you want about TikTok, but an entire generation of kids now have learned how important having captions on videos are.
Yeah.
And for a lot of our individuals with disabilities or old age, or again, just second language needs, captions are lifesavers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And now because of TikTok, a whole generation will watch videos and always think there's something missing. Oh, we need captions. That's pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, that is actually, that's so true. Finally, Zachary, the one thing I wanted to ask you, like, as we have discussed, generational difference is nothing new, but what kind of is new is like these new labels that we've given them. And we've talked about a few of them, like millennial, baby boomer, that kind of thing. Do you think that these labels are helpful? Because I've been reading some people saying like things would look different if we didn't pigeonhole generations in this way.
Well, I think there's idealism and there's realism, right? Mm. And people like groups. I could say that labels don't help. And in some cases, that's probably very true. In the field of disability, we talk about labels. You know, do we really want to call someone, do we really want to say that that person has a learning disability or a physical disability? Like, is that really helpful? But at the end of the day, it actually can get them some services that maybe they wouldn't have been able to acquire if they didn't have a label.
Mm-hmm.
So I go back and forth on that. Mm-hmm. As far as generational things, it's more helpful instead of labeling to say, you know, they're 24, 25 years old. They're trying to figure out what their passions are. If we look at it like that, as opposed to say, oh, well, they're Generation Z. They're just idealistic. But I also understand people put people in boxes because it's easy.
Yeah.
So there's worse labels. And if you find a generation that's really going to care about something and wants to break some of the really harmful labels down that we have in society, especially around, you know, equality and diversity, let's just go with it.
How we use the labels.
Yeah, it's how we use the labels. And again, if we're looking at labels as a group, that's usually a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I trust individuals. I very rarely trust groups.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about Generation Z, part of the reason that I feel like I can speak about it is because I work with individuals every day who are part of that.
Yeah.
I don't just cover a blanket of students. I actually work with individuals who are in that group. And so I think that's what we have to remember. Overall, if you get to know them as an individual, you have much more understanding than reading a book on Generation Z. And that being said, you know, I've read lots of books and I really enjoy thinking about the bigger trends, but they're trends of a group.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, if you look at the bell curve, right, they're not the focus on the end, and those are the individuals.
Yeah, I agree. Like, not reducing individuals to their like collective identity.
Exactly.
I really hope that you enjoyed that conversation on generational inclusion and difference. For me, it was a really interesting one and a really relevant topic, regardless of whether you're at university or you're now working within an organization or a business. I think it's something which even within families and personal relationships, we can really take a lot away from and hopefully cultivate a greater understanding of why people think the way they do, and to have compassion and grace for people who maybe weren't brought up against the same cultural and political landscape as you. I think this is a topic that we can all be engaging with in some way, and I really hope that the episode resonated with you. That is everything for this week's episode of the Catch Yourself On podcast. I want to thank Zachary for participating in the conversation. It was an absolute honour and pleasure to speak with him. Thank you to Joe and James for composing the music to the podcast. And if your ears liked what you heard, be sure to subscribe, where a new episode on a different topic will land into your earbuds every week. I hope that everyone has a beautiful week, and I look forward to speaking into your ears again soon. Until next time, bye!